Welcome back, or welcome into Footnotes. Kevin Foote, 103.7 The Game. Phone number 706-0111, 706-0111. Broadcasting from our First South Farm Credit Studios. Simulcast on Stadium 32.3 and 133 on LUS. It is, I'm going to call this a Cheetle Stick Park version of Footnotes on this Friday. Now, again, that's not what you think. Cheetle Stick Park was just not home of the San Francisco Cheaters in the 80s and 90s. Cheetle Stick Park had another very different, totally separate feature to it. Cheetle Stick Park was also home to San Francisco Giants. So there was a lot of reasons why I hated Cheetle Stick Park. And one of them was that, the 49ers, the football team, the 49ers, who, you know, cheated a lot to win in the 80s and 90s. And I hated them and hate them to this day because of that. That's one. The other feature is the Saints, the Astros used to be in the National League West. And in the National League West, they had to play the San Francisco Giants. And you had to play games at what I call Cheetle Stick Park. And when you played there, it was kind of like playing in Colorado in that it wasn't really baseball that you played. You know, I don't really know what you would call it, but I guess there were some games where it was normal. But then there were these games where, you know, pop-ups became these circus situations, and it happened on a pretty regular basis. I hated when the Astros went there. I mean, there's nothing more unsettling to me as a baseball fan. It's two outs. You're in a big jam, and a major league hitter hits a pop-up, and a major league player doesn't catch it, and they're running, they look like a little leaguer at his first ever practice all over the place, and then the ball drops. I mean, that's just the worst. And that's basically what happened last night at Fenway Park. I don't know exactly when Fenway became Cheetle Stick, but that's kind of what happened. You know, I did not expect the Astros to win yesterday. I fully expected them to lose. So it's not the loss that has really got on my nerves. It's how they lost. So, you know, they get behind again, and I'm not, you know, astonished by it because I, you know, Greinke pitched arguably his best game as an Astro the previous weekend. So I figured that he would have a letdown. And so I had mentally prepared myself for this loss because they were 5-1 against the Red Sox. And, you know, the Red Sox were at home and you figured they probably wouldn't get swept. So I'd prepared myself for this loss. So they fall behind and, you know, it's not the end of the world. And then they score, take a lead, 3-2. El Pedro Grande hits a two-run double to center. Great job. Then they fall behind again. Then they tie it. And then all of a sudden it's the fifth inning and they're up 7-4. Like, where did this come from? I didn't know how. I was sitting there astonished. So I was like, you know, it's the fifth inning. They're up 7-4, big three-run triple by Icky, Kyle Tucker. And I'm like, maybe I'm wrong here. Maybe they're actually going to maybe win this game. It'd be unbelievable. It'd be the best win of the year. It'd be unbelievable. And there was no signs pointed to, in my mind, to them winning this game. But when you're up 7-4 in the fifth inning, I'm like, wow, this might actually happen. So they get to the fifth inning, and, of course, Greinke's long out the game. because, you know, he had a medicine game. And their pitching, Belak. First of all, Brandon Belak, I already declared weeks ago, he should never throw another pitch for the Astros again. Why is Brandon Belak still on the Astros roster? He's not good. He needs to be pitching in AAA or in another on another organization. I got no problem with him pitching in AAA, but he don't ever need to throw another pitch for the Astros. So it gets to two outs, and he just can't do it. You know, gives up a game-tying three-run homer. Just awful. And then they get to the sixth. Altuve hits a homer. Lately, Altuve, he can hit a homer, he does nothing else. It's time for him to do something else. You know, and when they go to Minnesota, other than either hit a home run or make it out. We need something in between there. But anyway, he hit a big, I don't know how he did it. It was a pitch that was like he golfed it over the Green Monster. He gives him an 8-7 lead. Then we get to the sixth. And all of a sudden, you know, they look like they're going to tie it, but it's not the end of the world. There's a runner on third and one out. J.D. Martinez hits a lazy fly ball to right field. And all of a sudden, they're not playing at Fenway anymore. They're playing at Cheeto Stick Park in the late 80s. Like, we went back in time 30 years. Like, what in the world is going on here? I mean, again, it just looked like normal baseball. Got a runner on third. You got one out. J.D. Martinez, who hit a home run earlier in the game, was the first time he had done anything in seven games against the Astros. He hits a lazy fly ball to right. I mean, you know, you're not happy, but it's a sac fly. That happens. They were going to tie the game. And all of a sudden, as the ball starts to descend to Icky in right field, boom, it's like some magical, someone just like, all of a sudden, we're at Cheeto Stick Park in the late 80s again. I'm like, what am I watching here? I thought we were in Boston in 2021. So Icky does this goofy little league thing and drops the ball. I'm like, oh, so now you only have one out instead of two, and instead of having the bases empty, you got one. I'm like, oh, this is not looking good. Then a batter or two later, they hit a pop-up. It's the major leagues. Are we in Boston in 20? No, we're still not in Boston in 2021. We're back at Cheeto Stick in the 80s. I don't know how this happened. And all of a sudden, Carlos Correa is one of the best defensive players in the world. All of a sudden, he starts stumbling around like he's a little leaguer at his first practice. Cheeto Stick Park again, all over again. And boom, the ball drops. He drops the ball. A pop-up. Unbelievable. I mean, all of a sudden, I mean, again, I was mentally prepared for the loss. I mean, it was supposed to be a loss, but you don't want to just hand a game. So in the middle of all of this, you know, dropping pop-ups and Cheeto Stick Park all over again, I thought we were done with that junk. I mean, I thought I would never have to watch another Cheeto Stick Park game, baseball game ever. But last night, we saw one for about two innings. Like, it wasn't that way in the first three innings, and it wasn't that way later in the game. Like, why all of a sudden we had to go back in time 30 years and watch a Cheeto Stick Park game and blow it? So in the middle of all of that, they're throwing out these donkey relief pitchers again. I don't know what happened to some of these guys. Nolly Perez has no idea where the strike zone is. He has a zero command. Zero. And he comes in, and of course, to defend him and the pitching staff, if they would have caught the two pop-ups, then they wouldn't have been in that situation. But they end up scoring five runs in an inning where they really only got one base hit the whole inning. They walk in a run with the bases loaded. They hit a guy with the bases loaded, and that's awful, but they should have never even been in that situation. All you got to do is catch pop-ups. Now, I understand there probably was some sort of wind or something going on, but, man, the Red Sox didn't drop any pop-ups. So, again, I was prepared for the loss. I understood it was the Red Sox turn to win. They were 1-5 on the season series. But to just hand the game to them, I'd rather they'd have just gotten beat 10-1. And I'm normally not like that. But I just hate handing games to teams. You just gave it to them. Man, that was awful. Anyway, won't have to play the Red Sox again for the rest of the season unless they meet in the postseason, which I guess is theoretically possible. Again, what the Astros did offensively last night was way beyond my expectation. I don't know what. And the other thing is, you know, on paper, they're going to go to Minnesota, and they're due to struggle a little bit. But they've been crushing the ball on this road trip. And Minnesota has not actually had a good season. I don't know what's going to happen in this Minnesota series. Really, I have no idea. And speaking of Minnesota, last night, Aroldis Chapman comes out. Now, look, if it's somebody that I don't particularly like or a team that I don't particularly pull for, and especially one of the teams that's done all this whining, this silly whining about banging on trash cans. By the way, I guess the Astros, still, they lead the league in runs scored and hits and fewest strikeouts. I guess that's because they did all of that because they were banging on trash cans. People actually believe that. Anyway, I guess that's why they were doing it, even though they're no longer banging on trash cans. I guess that's why they're still leading the league in fewest strikeouts and most runs scored and highest batting average. And I guess they're doing all of this because now they're not banging on trash cans. And 4 years ago and 3 years ago, they were doing it because they were banging on trash cans. Please. Anyway, which was the stupidest thing you ever could have done. But last night in Minnesota, all of a sudden, Chapman gives up. Boom, boom, boom. Bing, bang, boom. 2-2 run homers, and they lose the game in the ninth. So what are they saying? Well, maybe his spin rate is down. So now every time somebody gives up a run or a hit or a home run or, oh, I don't know, has a bad out, oh. His spin rate, you know, this is going to get out of hand. Pitchers have been getting lit for 100 years. People have been stealing signs for 100 years. Pitchers have been messing with baseballs for 100 years. That's going to get a little old. His spin rate. And yes, all the Yankee fans that think it's impossible that anybody could hit a home run off of Aroldis Chapman. I mean, how can you do that? His lifetime ERA is not zero. Oh, boy. They kill me with that. All right, we'll take a commercial break. We'll talk about a different level of baseball. Kind of a sweet spot in my life as a journalist. We'll talk about that. Some American Legion baseball talk next on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to Footnotes. Kevin Foote on 103.7 The Game. Broadcasting from our First South Farm Credit Studios. Want to remind you, if you want to still have a chance to sign up to maybe win the Astro Weekend Getaway for the White Sox game, you can win 4 tickets to the Chicago White Sox Astro game at Minute Maid Park on Saturday, June the 19th. As well as a $200 Visa gift card. Today at 11 a.m. is the deadline to sign up. You need to go to 1037thegame.com, sign up for the clubhouse rewards, and you put yourself in position to win this great Astro weekend getaway. 4 tickets to White Sox Astros Saturday, June the 19th, and a $200 Visa gift card. Thanks to Butcher Air Conditioning, JJ and Jay Exterminating, and 1037thegame.com. All right, we have with us the Lafayette Drillers American Legion head coach, Matt Stannerford. How are you, sir?
Oh, great. How are you?
Well, for those of you who don't know, one of the first things I did as a very young, way skinny, probably about 40 or 50 pounds ago, maybe even more, young sports writer, way back in the early to mid-80s, one of the very first things I did is cover American Legion baseball when it was in a very different form and taken a lot more seriously by a lot more people in this area in the early 80s for Mr. Teague Moore, and met a lot of great guys and men and fathers, and you know, saw a lot of great ball players play. And then over the years, you know, travel ball came in and all this other many other things happened. And American Legion baseball started kind of dwindling. And for the last 5 years, we haven't even really had American Legion baseball in Lafayette. And then Matt comes in and decides that, you know, maybe we need to do this again. Tell us about that, Matt.
Yeah, so back in 2016, I was still in college and had the opportunity to coach the Indians in Opelousas. And really, really got fortunate enough to have an opportunity. And the Lafayette Drillers were in our district at that time. And so for the last 5 years, I coached in Opelousas. And that was the only year Lafayette had a team. And the program kind of went away for a little bit. And then recently, I took a job at Lafayette Christian and moved. And so when that came, there was also a new opportunity after talking with Coach Dome that we could start the Lafayette Drillers again. And with all the talent in Lafayette, and you know you cover it, and everybody can see that, with just the different schools in our area, there's too much talent, and sometimes people don't get a chance to see it. And so when the opportunity came about, I had to jump all over it and really try and bring American Legion back to our area.
So when you talk about Coach Domingue, you're talking about Chris Domingue, who, you know, going all the way back to the 80s, you know, when Anthony Babineaux was playing and it was a player instead of a coach. He was coaching, well, he was the Guaranty Bankers and the Premier Bankers and, you know, the American Legion team from Carencro. Back in those days and for a long time, each high school in Lafayette Parish had a team except for the Tom's Chippers, which combined Northside and Turlings. But then, you know, Acadiana was the DeLome Drillers, and they had the Hyman Chiefs was Como. I mean, that was like that from, like, you know, the late 70s, early 80s up in, you know, until not that long ago. So Chris is – and then once he stopped coaching, he kind of helped run the organization. So I'm sure he was real receptive to this idea.
Definitely. And Coach Domingue's been a huge help the entire way, just kind of coaching me through it. As far as it's a different group of kids, different type of baseball in Lafayette as opposed to Opelousas, even though it's really close to each other. Lafayette's a lot more into the travel ball with a lot of the big name programs. You got STM and Turlings and Acadiana and even Southside's coming out. So just kind of us working together, tag team, and trying to put the best possible group on the field. But, yeah, he's been totally receptive to it, and because he understands the importance of it and the difference that it's made in the kids' lives over the years and the type of opportunities that they've had because of it.
You know, Lafayette was always a little different, and when, especially when Mr. Moore was around. One of Mr. Moore's biggest things was, and for those of you who don't know, when Mr. Moore came to Lafayette, there was no high school baseball. I mean, I'm talking about Legion baseball. There was no high school baseball, hardly, in the whole Lafayette Parish. I mean, he played an integral role in the 60s and early 70s of getting high school baseball programs started. For Lafayette. They were all over the country where some areas they didn't play high school baseball, even have teams in the 60s and 70s. They would just play summer ball, Legion ball. And so he played an integral role in starting baseball. But his big deal was he wanted kids to play. So instead of having all these all-star teams, he had a lot of kids play. We're not doing that now. So now that you're restarted, like, what goes into the composition of your team?
So basically, what we did from the start was trying to put at least 9 on the field. And I know it sounds crazy because with all the schools in our area, but our biggest thing was being able to make sure we had enough to play and compete. And then once we got to the 9 mark, we went through and started to find some of the really good kids. A lot of these seniors who weren't going to play travel ball and really wanted one last opportunity. And some of them have already committed to play baseball at the next level. And so for them, this is kind of their last chance to really have fun and enjoy before their real grind starts at the college level. And for some of these guys, this might be the last time that they ever pick up a baseball. So we just want to give them the opportunity to kind of end it on a high note, because none of the schools that we pulled from ended up winning the state championship this year. So that was one of the things that I kind of used as a driving force to kind of motivate some of them to play. It was one last opportunity for them to go out on top.
Okay, so like what schools, as it's turned out, is it still kind of where the roster is not totally set yet, or is it set? And either way, like what schools are you primarily drawing from?
Yes, sir. So we have a couple kids from Southside, Acadiana, Lafayette High, Karen Crow, and then we have a couple homeschool kids too. And we have a couple players from LCA.
And so you're going to be playing your games at LCA, and if anyone wants to go watch, when your first home games are next week, is that correct?
Yes, sir. So we play Monday at LCA, which their field is at Moore Park at 7 o'clock against the St. Landry Bank Indians, and that game will be for first place in the district.
So how many games have y'all played so far?
We played three. We started Tuesday, Wednesday, and then we played again last night. We won a thriller in 10 innings, 7-3 over the Opelousas Warriors.
And what do your numbers look like?
So right now we're at about 17 kids, which is really, really great as far as a coaching standpoint, being able to have some options, but also great to see that many kids out wanting to play. We're hoping next year that if we're only at one, maybe two teams, but we have to have a tryout next year because we want to get a lot more kids involved in this.
All right. Again, we're speaking with Matt Stanford, who is American Legion baseball coach for the Lafayette Drillers, and they kind of restarted the American Legion program. Did you ever get a sense, like, while Lafayette kind of faded away in Legion for a while, it kind of remained pretty popular in Opelousas, in the Crawley area? I know they've been real big in American Legion baseball, even though when it started to die in certain areas. What about it in those two communities? Why did it stay popular, do you think?
So we were fortunate enough when we were in Opelousas, two of the kids that played for me my first year, we ended up going to state and did real well. The second year, we beat John Curtis, and we beat Holy Cross, and then the kids started to realize that you play good competition. You're going to play in front of some college scouts at Delgado when you make it to the state tournament. And so we really had a lot of momentum, and a couple of the kids playing for me that first and second year ended up joining my staff and became my assistant coaches. And then they had little brothers on local high school teams, and at that time I was coaching at Westminster, so I got to pick from those kids, got to pick from Opelousas Catholic, St. Ed's, and a couple other schools in the area. And really, since Lafayette didn't have a team, we were fortunate enough. We got an Acadiana player and two Turlings players, and those kids really made the difference for us. And so we were able to combine that with the talent that we already had in Opelousas. And that was an Opelousas Catholic team that lost in the state championship. So we were able to get a lot of really, really good players. And so that helped keep the momentum. And one thing, and this is not a brag on us as a coaching staff, but more American Legion baseball in general, and Mr. Ken Thibodeau, our district chairman, for the first 5 years I was at Opelousas, we were able to put 15 kids playing at the college level. And that was a big driving force. One of my assistant coaches, we played first game of the state tournament the first year. We played Jesuit. And he was behind the plate, and he threw out three kids. And the BRCC coach was in our dugout before the game ended to offer a scholarship. And so once the kids kind of saw that, they saw the opportunities that come from it. And the big thing is, too, this is not a knock on other organizations because they have to charge money because they travel all over the state and different things like that. But it doesn't cost a penny to play American Legion baseball. And that's a huge thing, especially for with the time we're in with the pandemic and stuff like that, it really gives these kids and parents an opportunity to play elite baseball for relatively nothing.
And again, that goes back to Mr. Moore's original primary purpose of wanting as many kids the possibility and the option to play baseball and to have something to do in the summer and to play the game of baseball. So it doesn't look, from what I could see, you're not playing a lot of regular season games. And then tell us about how the postseason works.
Yes, sir. So this year should be back to normal as far as state tournament goes. So we'll play about 12 to 14 regular season games, just depending on weather and tournaments and different things like that. So what they normally do is they'll take the top two teams out of our district and then the top two teams out of the Southeast District, which is the Houma area, with Goche Amedy and the Southland Hogs, two of the premier teams in the state. And then they'll bring six teams from the New Orleans area, and we'll all go to Delgado, and we'll play a 10-team bracket tournament. It's double elimination. And from there, the winner advances to the regional. And the last year that they had the regional was in Tampa, Florida. And then after that, if you win that tournament, then you advance to the American Legion World Series, which is in Shelby, North Carolina. And the cool thing about it is once you make it to postseason play, you don't have to pay for hotels. You don't have to pay for anything like that. And the last two teams that won the state tournament in Louisiana finished in the top four in the World Series. So it really shows how much talent there still is in American Legion baseball.
You know, New Orleans has always, I mean, have they ever waned? I mean, it seemed like they've been taking American Legion baseball seriously going back to the 80s when I first got involved in it.
Yes. So Legion baseball is huge over there. So unlike a lot of teams across the state, what they use Metro for is actually American Legion. So there's a 32 teams in the state playing right now, and I'm pretty sure 26 of them are from the New Orleans area. So it's still a big deal. And they're in a really fortunate spot because they get to play a majority of their games at Delgado. And so that is a big thing for all those teams down there. And one thing that we're trying to get to the point too in our area, kids grow up and they're in the New Orleans area wanting to play American Legion baseball, and all of their high school head coaches or the coaches of their teams have all played it. And so it's a big deal. And so everybody understands the importance of it. So whereas we're trying to introduce that in our area.
Well, it sounds like it. It's just nice to hear that there's some former Legion back in ball in Lafayette Parish. I know there are a lot of people that go back to the 70s and 80s and the Mr. Cook and the Burger Chef days. And you know, that a lot of good players came through that program. And you know, you still see them out. A lot of them are dads now and their sons are playing. And it's nice to hear that. So I appreciate you doing that and the driving force you hit, and good luck for the rest of the season.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having us on. And one last thing before we go, you mentioned his name, but Mr. Moore, words cannot express how grateful we are of him and his family and just the dedication to not only American Legion baseball in the Lafayette area, but just the kids in general, because at the end of the day, that's what it's about. So thank you for having us on. And again, we play Monday at LTA at 7. We'd love to have as many people out in the community out supporting us. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Wow. Impressive, Matt Standiford. No, amen on Mr. Moore. Every once in a while, I'll tell some Mr. Moore stories. I love it, love it, love it. We will take a commercial break and be back on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to Footnotes. Kevin Foote, 103.7 The Game. Want to remind you about our Dad Doesn't Need Another Tie sweepstakes. Go to 1037thegame.com, sign up, and you might win a $500 Visa gift card that could make you the hero of the Father's Day weekend. You could find some great prize with a $500 Visa gift card, but you can't win if you don't join. So go to 1037thegame.com. Join today. Dad Doesn't Need Another Tie sweepstakes, powered by Cajun Gun and Gear and 1037 The Game, Acadiana Sports Station. All right, let's go to the phone lines. Hello.
I just wanted to tell you, the Minnesota Twins, I think the Lafayette Drillers could give them a good game, but this is a bad baseball team you're fixing to hook up with this weekend.
What happened to them?
Yeah, Kevin, they had three rookies in the outfield last night from left to right. Three. I guess they got injury problems. I don't know. Simmons is a good shortstop. He can't hit his way out of a wet paper bag.
Right.
They got three big boppers. If you can work your way around those three guys, but they are bad, Kevin. I don't know what happened to the Twins.
I mean, the last three years, they've been good. Now, y'all have always owned them, but the last 3 years, they've been pretty good.
They've been pretty good.
They're awful.
They've been pretty doggone good. But I don't know what that was. We just went through with 3 games with them, but they are bad.
You should have seen the six.
That was some good medicine for us these last 3 days, regardless of what happened last night. I mean, they've got some guys on our team feeling good about themselves all over it. This is a bad baseball team you're fixing to hook up with this week.
Now, your boy,
you're going to have an easy weekend.
Well, I hope you're right. But again, the Astros have been hitting so much, I don't know how long they can keep this up. Now, the Yankees are fixing to go play the Phillies, and your boy Stan, they said he's not quite ready to play the field yet.
What?
They're saying... I heard him talking about it this morning. They asked Boone last night. He says, I don't know that we're quite ready. I don't know if he's ready to play in the field. So he's probably just going to be a pinch hitter.
So he's going to get 4 days off. We got an off day today and an off day Monday. And he's not going to play this weekend. He just as soon take a trip.
Yeah.
Go to Cancun for a couple of days, come back next Tuesday when we play Toronto.
Yeah.
I've never seen a man get this much rest.
Seemed like he could play some right field. Hello? Oh, no, okay. Is he going? Okay. No, I don't know what happened there. But anyway, it just seemed like he could play a little right field. I don't know. It's a problem when you have a kind of a DH and then you play interleague play. Now, to El Perro Grande, who's... Yordan Alvarez, to his credit, he's played a little left field, even against American League teams. He played 2 nights ago in left field. So he's played a little left field. So, like, if the Astros now went to play a National League team, he could play a little bit. But, no, if one of your best hitters is your DH and he can't play because they worried he's going to run and pull a hamstring or something. Oh, it's kind of infuriating, to tell you the truth. So I get Larry's point on that. But, I don't know what's going to happen. Like, it seems like the Astros are going to better go to Minnesota and crush it because they're struggling bad. But, I mean, how many games in a row can the Astros pound the baseball? I just know that the baseball just doesn't work that way. So I don't know what's about to happen. It kind of doesn't make sense, but we'll see. All right, let's go back to the phone lines. Hello.
Hey, Kevin.
Howdy, sir.
Hey, this is Eddie Hebert.
Hey.
I played American Legion Baseball in the late 70s and the early 80s for the Hyman Chiefs.
I remember.
That was the Rogers Rabbits era. And I enjoyed the comments about bringing American Legion Baseball back to Lafayette. I count those among the best times of my life. The way that league was run, you played a lot of games, you got a lot of experience, and let the players develop. And you also created this great camaraderie among all the baseball, all the high school baseball programs in the city. I followed up by coaching. I coached with Danny Cook, who was the high school coach at Cairn Crow, and we coached the Lafayette High-based Mr. Cook team for a few years.
I remember.
It's just wonderful to hear American Legion Baseball back in Lafayette.
I agree with you. Thank you very much for the call. And I don't know. I'm not a techno guy, and maybe somebody can, but you probably could Google it even if you can't find it. But we did a 4th of July show last summer for those of you who may have missed it. And if you would like to hear it, I'm maybe you could Google the station and Mr. Moore. With Chris Domingue, who Matt Standiford and I brought up, who's still he's a fireman is what he is, but he was a longtime American Legion baseball coach for the, the Guaranty Bankers, Premier Bankers, whatever, out of Cairn Crow. And he's now on the UL baseball coaching staff and has a role there. And I'm sure he's real busy with camps and stuff this summer, but we did a show kind of to honor Mr. Moore. And so I don't know if there's a way to get that. You might be interested in that show. But, no, it was a great thrill for me as a very young sports writer. I used to, I was the official scorer for all the games, and I would keep the stats and try to run the crazy scoreboard. And I still think about that fairly often. When I go cover games at Russo Park, I think about what it was like in the old Moore Field with that old clunky scoreboard, and you know, each team had to have a dad that would come up there, and we'd have a good time. And then I'd hear, you know, Mr. Perot, who unfortunately just passed away, and different Mr. Baudouin, and a lot of the older Legion guys, and they would go up there and tell stories. You know, it was just great. It was great. And so I appreciate and I very much remember Eddie being an assistant coach and coaching Legion. And I had a great time covering it, and went to Lake Charles for a few regionals, saw some crazy coaches get thrown out, and all kind of stuff all kind of stories to be told with American Legion baseball back then. It was very different, and I always liked the fact that Mr. Moore had that "I want more kids to play" attitude, because I do think that's basically what it should be about. But it was always seemed a little bit, I don't know if unfair is the word, but overly challenging, because, like, for instance, they would play, you know, the big powerhouse in that era was Lusto Ford, and they would combine, you know, three or four high schools like Santa Monica and East Ascension and maybe Ascension Catholic or something into one team. That team at that time was coached by Wade Simido, who later coached for the Cajuns and was the head coach of Louisiana Tech. And he was an assistant coach for the Cajuns when they went to the World Series with Coach Robichaud and all them back in 2000. So, but back then he was coaching that Legion team. And they had a couple players that didn't, you know, played at LSU. And I remember that one series, a state final with or regional final, I guess that was. Maybe it was state. But anyway, it was against DeLone, which was one high school. They just had players from Acadiana High or, you know, whatever. I mean, Lafayette, you know, other than the Tom's Chippas, which had coached by another jewel in Mr. Claude Blakely, who, you know, you know, he had his way of saying things, had a lot of fun with Coach Blakely. But they combined Turlings and Northside from that community. But you know, you always had one high school going against, like, an all-star team. But that's the way Mr. Moore wanted it. He wanted more kids to have the opportunity. And then travel ball came and all that, and the whole landscape changed. But, yeah, I agree with Eddie. It's why I had Matt on. Because I know that was a cool part of my early days as a sports writer covering American Legion baseball. And it was a lot of fun. And I know it's, for some people, it's a thing of the past, but it's great that it's back in some form, and we'll see, you know, what this, Drillers team can do. And, you know, obviously, again, Opelousas is very much in our area, and Crowley's very much in the Acadiana area, and obviously they've kind of sustained it, and kudos to them for doing that. And some of them have, like Matt has described, had some great success. Appreciate those comments. All right. We'll take a commercial break and shift gears. We'll just have a one short segment. But in the next hour, we'll get back to a little bit more football. But if you have thoughts of Major League Baseball issues we talked about or American Legion baseball memories, certainly feel free to call back next hour. We'll take a break, and we'll be back at 103.7 The Game. 3-7 The Game. Want to remind you, Astros will begin, as Larry was discussing, a three-game series tonight against the Minnesota Twins. You can listen to all that action on our sister station, News Talk 98.5 and 1520 AM. First pitch, 7:10. I believe Jose Urquidy's pitching. He had won five straight starts, and he got lit in his last outing. So it'll be interesting to see how he bounces back. And again, this whole weekend series, if you were think back to last year, I remember being not feeling good going into that opening round playoff series. The Astros did not have a good regular season in the shortened COVID season. They snuck in as finished as the second place team in the American League West, and they were going to Minnesota, which had the best home record in all of baseball. And the Astros were a terrible road team last year. Terrible. And so on paper, this didn't make any sense that they were going to win, other than the fact that the Minnesota Twins had not won a home playoff. I mean, hadn't won a playoff series in a long, long time. I don't even remember. It's like 20-something in a row or so. I mean, it's just incredible. I mean, so I'm thinking, man, you got the best home team in the league. You got one of the worst road teams in the league. And you got a team that is so due to win a playoff series that it's not even funny. It didn't look good. And yet the Astros went over there and won two games and then advanced to the ALDS where they beat the little Oakland A's who thought for sure they were going to win, but they did it. And that was funny. And since then, the Twins have been terrible. Like, I remember, you know, I went with the White Sox to win the division, and I even picked the White Sox to go to the World Series, and a lot of people agree with that. That's not a, like, wasn't a real going out on much of a limb. But I had the Twins finish in second. I mean, they've been great the last 3 years in the regular season. And then they have just never know when a team's going to hit the wall. And, boy, if they hit a wall, wow. You know, as Larry said, they still have Cruz who can really hit, Sano who can really hit. You know, they have a couple really good players still. It's not like they don't have any good players. You know, Buxton, when he's healthy, is kind of coming to his own as a hitter, and yet they just, man, they have not pitched well. Their bullpen's been terrible. I don't know what's about to happen. I don't know what's about to happen. But it's going to be an interesting series to see what happens. But again, you can hear it right here on our sister station, 98.5 FM 1520. A lot of 103.7 over the weekend is going to be doing LSU Tennessee Super Regional Baseball, which is going to be very interesting in its own right. And we'll see. Kind of wish that series was Friday, Saturday. I don't really like these Saturday, Sunday, Monday series, but I guess somebody's got to do them for TV, and LSU's one of them. But should be a very interesting series there, obviously, there as well. All right, commercial break. We'll finish up the first hour. Shift gears to a little football in the next hour, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to Footnotes. Kevin Foote on 103.7 The Game. Phone number 706-0111, 706-0111. We're broadcasting from our First South Farm Credit Studios. Simulcast on Stadium 32.3 and 133 on LUS. We've talked a lot of baseball in the first hour. We're going to talk more football. If you would like to call, though, and talk about any of those baseball issues or any American Legion baseball memories that people have, certainly feel free to do that as well. But want to try to do finalize kind of a top 10 of our Footnote Summer Project. There's probably a few more games that we can mention, but out of like the 30-something suggestions that we've got, I'm going to try to do a top 10, and of course, if I give it, it won't be in this segment, a little bit later, and you want to argue, certainly feel free. Maybe you can convince me otherwise to change it to another, but there's some, you know, other football issues that are going on. We have not commented yet. There was some talk earlier this week about the new college football playoff system. Yesterday, we got the kind of outline of what a 12-team playoff would look like. And, you know, there are some people who, you know, no matter what system you come up with, there are plus and minuses. I get that. And there are going to be some people that are going to really hate it, and there are going to be some people that are going to like it, and there are some people that are going to won't be able to get off of the things that they don't like about it and harp on it. That's just life, especially in this era. But I think if they go to this 12-team, which seems like what they're going to do, it's going to be the closest to where we get to the point where, and not, I'm not talking about individual games or players or coaches. I'm talking about the structure of college football. It's going to be the first time in a long time that you could, you won't be able to say that college football is kind of a joke. I mean, it's been bad for a long time. I mean, think about it. The whole mythical thing is not good. And then the whole, well, we're going to go by the eye test is not good. Not good. And so I'm not saying that there haven't been great teams, because there have. And I'm not saying there haven't been great games. There have been many great games. We, you know, in and of themselves, the games can be great, but that doesn't mean the structure of the sport is right. And I think the structure of college football has been a mess for a very long time. Maybe forever. And I think this is going to be the closest to what. Now, again, why they have to open themselves up to this stuff, I guess it's just part of college football. Like, you know, it's just got to have a problem. I mean, I don't understand it. Like, for those of you who have not heard, here's the kind of the basic concepts of it. There's going to be six teams that are going to get in because they are the six, they're conference champions of the six highest conferences. And so essentially that's five, the winning of the five power conferences, the champions of the five power conference, and then one, and whoever wins the, you know, of the group of five as it currently exists, whoever wins the, you know, whoever's the highest rated conference champion from the group of five, and then six at-large bids, which, you know, that's where the eye test still comes in. So there's still going to be facets of this eye test, but it's not going to mean everything. In the past, everything was about the eye test. But now, at least, there won't, half the field will be selected where you kind of know what you have to do before, exactly what you have to do before you even play a game. And if you do it, then you're in, you know, for many of them. And then you have the six eye tests at large bursts. Now, one of the issues is that if you're a top four seed, the way it works is the top four seeds get byes, which in concept most of us don't have an issue with. The bottom, the next eight teams will play at the highest four seeds of those eight home sites. So if you're a five seed, six seed, seven seed, nine seed, you get to play this first round at home. And if you are a top four seed, you don't get to play the first round at home. Some people are upset about that. I don't know that that's a major deal, because a lot of these teams play these big, high-profile non-conference games at, like, neutral sites anyway. So I don't know that that's a huge deal. But some people will have an issue with that. Notre Dame is another issue that people are talking about with all this, because they don't belong to a conference. So I think in the past, Notre Dame has gotten some, you know, it's kind of benefited them that they weren't in a conference. And there are a lot of people that very much dislike Notre Dame because of that. And I certainly understand that. And so you might say, well, if this is a problem for them, tough. They've reaped the benefits in the past. I could go along with that. But the other thing is, I really believe that they're going to have to join a conference. I mean, they are in other sports, and they were last year during COVID. So why not just join a conference? Like, why put yourself in that position? Because it would be silly if one year Notre Dame actually did earn on the field being a top four seed, and they couldn't be a top four seed because they're not in a conference. I mean, why put, if you're Notre Dame, why put yourself in that position one day? Now, college football shouldn't allow that. Can you imagine if the Saints went 14-2 or 13-3 one year, that someone didn't go 14-2 for a change or whatever the stupid 17 game schedule is going to be, record would be now. And you earned it, but you can't be a top four seed. You can't get a first round bye because you play in the South or because you play in a dome stadium or some weird thing that, I mean, whatever. Like everyone else, if they did it, they would get it, but you don't get it. Nah, how can you have a system like that? I mean, again, even when they're trying to do the right thing, college football still can't do it right. So they've got to figure out that that's just not the way it's supposed to be. So they and I know a lot of you saying, I don't care, it's Notre Dame. I get that, but what if it was you? I don't like that. They need to figure that out. And maybe we start it, and maybe Notre Dame just joins a conference, and it would still be true for the other independents, but the other independents, what are the chances that they're ever going to be in the top four? Probably not real good. So 90-some to 100% of the time, it's not going to matter anyway. So I get that. My other question about this, and again, this is all goes to the eye test part, and it's not a major hang-up, but what I wonder is, here's what I wonder from a mid-major perspective. I'm talking about for the six at-large bids. If you have a really good year, like the Cajuns did last year, or like Coastal Carolina did, and then, you know, obviously they weren't able to finish it off, or whatever. If you have one of these really special seasons as a mid-major, I think most teams, most people involved in the whole ranking process and poll process don't have a problem, a real, real big problem with putting a Cincinnati or a Coastal or a Cajuns or whoever, like 10th, or 11th or 12th, you know, that would put them maybe get one of these at-large bids in like last year or the year before, because it's just a number. It doesn't really mean anything. But when it really means an at-large bid into the top 12, are they going to be as likely to do that when it really means something rather than, oh, you got to play in the Orange Bowl or the Fiesta Bowl, and it really had nothing to do with the national championship. We just threw you a bone. So that's going to be something I'm going to watch to see how that part of it plays out. Let's go to the phone lines. Hello.
Footsie.
Hello, sir.
Hey, Footsie, would you ask the little fella that runs the board, if we're having a conversation, like I make a statement, then you make a statement, and I'm not speaking when you make a statement, not to hang up on me, because that's how you have a conversation. You talk, I talk, you talk, I talk. And last time he just hung up on me. So, you know, if he would be so kind not to hang up on me, I would really appreciate it. But what I wanted to say was, you're making a lot of good comments. Also, I appreciate, you know, you promoting American Legion Baseball, because some people remember when you were the score, what was it, $5 a game?
Oh, I don't remember. But it was probably something like that, $5 or $10 a game, yeah.
Well, a person with knowledge told me that it was $5. So
okay,
I can't check with him anymore. But yeah, we'll just go with what he said.
Yeah.
But no, it's good to see American Legion Baseball trying to make a little comeback. I don't know, you know, if it'll ever be on the level it once was, but it's good to see it trying making a comeback. And how about Gerard Malonso last night becoming the 35th jockey in the history of horse racing to win 5,000 races? We thought it was going to happen last weekend, but it happened this weekend. So congratulations to Gerard.
Absolutely. Look forward to talking to him this afternoon and getting some comments from him. Yes, very congratulations to him. He's a really good guy and obviously overcome a lot in his life. And this is a great achievement. So, yes, I concur.
Yeah. Absolutely, Footsie. Well, Footsie, like I said, thank you for trying to promote American Legion Baseball. What is a three-team district, Lafayette, Crowley, and Abbeville,
well, there's
Opelousas?
There's a couple Opelousas teams, and there's one other team. I think it's more than three teams. I didn't memorize the whole district, but I saw the schedule, and there's more than three teams.
And you know what's interesting is that, like the Crowley Millers, like you remember that man you had in who wrote the book?
Right.
these American Legion teams have taken on, like the Opelousas Indians. Those were like the Evangeline League teams' names.
Yep, and they have an Opelousas Warriors. Yeah, absolutely. In fact, you know, when I was in the, you know, in the doing a lot of Legion, there was the Eunice Oilers, which came from that same, and there was a Turk family connection there. So yeah, a lot of cool ties back to the Evangeline League. All right, appreciate the phone call. Thank you very much. And I don't know. We'll see how this college football works, but I definitely think it's progress. Definitely do, and hopefully, college football can get rid of so many of the things that, in my mind, has kind of tarnished it over the years. Should be a great, great game with no tarnishment, but. Hopefully this is a huge step in the right direction. We'll take a commercial break. We'll be back. 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to Footnotes. Kevin Foote on 103.7 The Game. Want to remind you, great local programming again tomorrow, even though it's a weekend, starting at 7 a.m. with First Cup, presented by Bailey Cigar Room. The Professor will have on LSU Eunice, seven-time Division II in that National Junior College Athletic Association national champion Jeff Willis will join the program. And Coach Willis has obviously done a tremendous job with that program over the years and won another national championship in Enid, Oklahoma. Old school basketball fans should remember Enid, Oklahoma. That's where Mark Price played at Georgia Tech. And if Enid, Oklahoma sounds familiar, that's what where it comes from. Played in the NBA and probably was playing for the Cavaliers in some of those famous Michael Jordan plays. But anyway, that's where they play the national championship, and they won a seventh one this past weekend, last Saturday. So a week after that, he will be sitting in with the Professor, and then that will be followed from 9 to 11 with Under the Dome with CD Clint Domingue, and I'm sure they'll be talking a lot about previewing the LSU-Tennessee Super Regional Series that night. So lots of great local programming on 103.7 The Game tomorrow morning beginning at 7 a.m. All right. It is the final day of week two of our Footnote Summer Project. And before we go over maybe a few more Saints games that we haven't told the story of this year, this week, and then trying to get to a top 10, I want to say that next week we're really going to need help. Next week is high school week, which over the years when I do high school week for this for a project like this or similar to this, it can be lots of fun. I mean, in some ways, it's the most fun of all of them. But it requires some, fans from different schools to participate because it's easy to, you know, if you're a fan of Acadiana or St. Thomas More or Turlings or Karen Crow or whatever, you're going to remember those games for your team, but you're not necessarily going to remember or have a lot of experience or memory of a game, for someone else's school, whoever that might be. So we're going to do football. We'll try to do basketball. We might need Danny a little bit to help us with basketball or some of you. If we get enough basketball, we'll do basketball. But we'll focus primarily on football and see how that goes. But high school football, we'll try to get some high school football coaches in next week and maybe get some of theirs games that and their feel good, great victory games or some extra satisfying ones. But just a warning: next week, high school week. And we'll be doing football, and, you know, if we get some basketball ones, I certainly would like to do it, but we'll need some participation, so we'll see how that goes. As far as this NFL week, and which here locally we kind of centered around the Saints. There's a couple games that probably haven't been mentioned yet. One game, and it's real specific to this area probably, but one feel-good game that has not been mentioned yet was, what would that have been? Christmas Eve 1999. Christmas Eve 1999, it was the very end of the Mike Ditka era, which thankfully ended after only 3 years, and I wish it would have never happened, but it did. And they named Jake Delhomme the starting quarterback for a Saturday game, Christmas Eve. I remember exactly where I was, at my mom's place or apartment in Lafayette, and we were having a family Christmas celebration, and the Saints were terrible that year because Mike Ditka was the coach, and he was a buffoon, and was way ahead of his, was way behind the times, but they've started Jake, and they beat the Cowboys. We were talking about great victories over the Cowboys, and that made you feel good, and it was more because Jake, who obviously is from here, played at Turlings and with the Cajuns, and it was more of a Jake thing just to have a local product winning for the Saints. But it kind of made you feel good because you know it was a miserable season overall. So yeah, that was one real feel good victory that was very satisfying to watch, and Jake running around with all his enthusiasm. That was great. So that's one of the feel good wins. In an otherwise insignificant victory in the grand scheme of things, you would say. But no, on that day, it certainly was a lot of fun and felt great. Let's go back to the phone lines. Hello. Didn't hang on. But anyway, try to call back if you would like. But no, that is a that was a lot of fun for sure. And we've talked, I don't know, again, this is probably 20 to 30-something games on this list. And I'm going to try to, I kind of jotted down the 10 that kind of resonated with me the most. And normally we go 10 to 1, but I'm going to start at 1 and go down to 10. Because 1 is kind of easy. Again, 1 has to be the Katrina game. I understand you could argue, and I've made the argument before, that it goes in a completely different category, really. And it's almost like it's its own animal or whatever category or whatever, but still we only have one category here. And so it is, one has to be the Katrina game. It went way beyond just feeling good over an individual football team or revenge situation. It was redemption, but it was a whole different kind of level of redemption. And so the one, it's the Katrina game. No doubt about it. Now, two, I'm going to go with the NFC Championship game. One, because it's the first time the Saints ever went to the Super Bowl. Well, the only time they ever went to the Super Bowl. And shouldn't have been, but it is still the only time they ever went to the Super Bowl. But it's not really just that. It's that it was the Vikings. And it was, again, if you get the theme to so many of these historic situations with the Saints, there was so, in my mind, the Saints cheated the Vikings that day. That made me feel a little better because you kind of got a little retribution for all the times that the Saints felt cheated over the years. Then you got a little retribution for beating the Vikings, who had given you so much angst and so much humiliation and so much frustration and so many just whippings over the years. I mean, just behind the woodshed whoopings. And so that added to that, the greatness of that feel-good victory. Plus, the Vikings outplayed the Saints. And so many times, if you listen to a lot of these games as we talk about Saint history, oh, the Saints outplayed them in the loss. You know, the Saints outplayed them, should have won, but they didn't. as the old statement goes, they snatch defeat from the jaws of victory. And so all those elements went into that game. It was, you know, obviously a tremendous feel-good game. So I got to put that one number two. The rest of these are very difficult. I mean, trying to do it, it's a crapshoot, as they say. But I'm going to go with number three, and I'm going to go back to 1987. And remember what, obviously, that was the Saints' first winning season, and so it was the first time you really, really did feel good. And the really, really that you did have these, what you would call great victories or landmark victories or turnaround victories in the history of a franchise. And a couple weeks before this, the Saints lost a game at home to the Cheaters, the famous shoulda, woulda, coulda game. And it was a shoulda, woulda, coulda. You totally outplayed them, the Cheaters, but you lost. And Mora was getting a little sick of it. He had had it. You know, his first season in 86, they went 7-9, and we were kind of encouraged, but he was frustrated because they really should have won 9 or 10 games that year. They just shoulda, woulda, coulda some losses away. And after shoulda, woulda, coulda outplaying the 49ers and then losing in the shoulda, woulda, coulda game, I don't remember exactly, but it was like two or three weeks later, they went to Cheeto Stick and got outplayed. Should have lost the game. Got outplayed, but found a way to win and blocked a field goal, and Johnny Poe ran it back for a touchdown and beat the Cheaters at Cheeto Stick 26-24. And now it was that game just had so much meaning to it. And it kind of, you know, was the – It didn't start the 9-game winning streak, but it was the game where you finally felt like you got over this big hump. And so I'm going to go with that one as number three. Number four, someone suggested this during the week, and it's a great suggestion. I didn't know what to do with this game because this list is not so much about significance, but it did feel good. I mean, forever. Once you got that win in 1987, the next step was, okay, we had a winning season for the first time ever, made the playoffs for the first time ever. Well, the next step was to win a playoff game. They got blown out by the Vikings in 87. They got cheated out of the playoffs and a division title in 88. It just bad luck in 89. They didn't get cheated as much as it just didn't happen. In 90, they lost a playoff game. In 91, they lost a playoff game. In 92, they lost a playoff game. It was like, are you ever going to win a playoff game? And finally, you beat the Rams and won a playoff game. So I'm going to have to put that one number four just because of it. You know, it was a great victory. It was, you know, you played without your starting running back. You play without your starting wide receiver, and you still beat them. And so the defending Super Bowl champion. So it was I'm going to put that one at number four. All right, I hear the music. We'll take a commercial break. We'll come back, finish off the top 10 list, as I see it anyway, from your suggestions and mine from earlier this week. We'll do that next on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to Footnotes. Kevin Foote on 103.7 The Game. Want to remind you, go to the website, go to 103.7thegame.com. Could put yourself in position to win a $40 gift card at Dickie's Barbecue Pit. Would be great for any kind of summer family get-together or just a night out or lunch or a night out to eat a little bit during the summer or watching the LSU baseball game or watching an Astro game or whatever you would like. But you can't win if you don't join. So go to 1037thegame.com, and you might win. Sign up for the Rewards Club. You might win a $40 gift card to Dickie's Barbecue Pit. Thanks to Dickie's and 1037 The Game, Katiana Sports Station. All right, we finished off at number four. Number five on the list, again, is one that kind of came from me because I think most of Saints fans, even Saints fans of my age, kind of forgotten about. this, but what they didn't forget about is the Big Ben play. And it's a play that comes up a lot. And it was an agonizing loss. And then 2 weeks later, they lost by the same score. And then the season opener the next year in 1979, we told the story earlier this week if you missed it, the season opener the next year after losing two 20-17 games to the Falcons that they should not have lost. Should have won both games. They didn't. And they, of course, the NFL opens the next season with the Falcons in the Superdome with a chance to get revenge. And not only do the Saints lose in heartbreaking fashion in overtime, they lose 40-34, which is double the 20-17 scores of the two agonizing losses to the Falcons that should never have happened in 1978. So when the two teams played again in Atlanta at Fulton County Stadium, which no longer exists, and Raymond and I kind of walked, and when the Cajuns played Georgia State this year, before we left, we went and walked on the ground where which used to be Fulton County Stadium, and his purpose was to go see the Hank, where the, you know, the Hank Aaron home run ball landed, which was really cool. But also, I had thoughts of the Saints playing the Falcons in that very stadium, and one of the great victories, if not the best victory, that the Saints had over the Falcons was this one. The second time they played in 1979, you had all that at the time pent up frustration from the two agonizing losses, including the Big Ben loss in 79 and then the overtime loss in the season opener of 79, and beat the Falcons 37-6. And it was just at the time a really feel good win because, you know, you had just lost three just agonizing games to the team that, you know, it's your longtime rival. All right. Then in 1991, I've gone on and on about explaining the history of the Vikings and what they've done to the Saints over the years. In 1991, after those three totally humiliating blowout victories, the Saints finally got a little revenge, beat the Vikings 26-0, and that was a lot of fun. Then you get to the ones that, you know, the little petty side of me. Number seven, I'm going to put the 2000 win over the Cheaters. I think they were still at Cheeto Stick in 2000. You know, you had 7 years of no quarterback play or very mediocre quarterback play and searching for one, and you hadn't made the playoffs or had a winning season in a while. And finally in 2000, you get a new head coach and Mike Ditka's gone and you lose your quarterback. And then 3 weeks into the new quarterback, Aaron Brooks, you go to San Francisco when you're down 14-3 at the half, and you come back and win in thrilling fashion. So I've got that number seven. The following year, you played the Rams, who were still the greatest show on turf. Everyone's talking about them. The Saints go to St. Louis. They're down 24-6 and came back and won. And not only did they won with physical football against this fancy finesse team that everyone was talking about. And no one really thought the Saints could win that game, especially when they were down 24-6 at the half. That was a great victory. Great, great victory. Number nine, I'm going to put the suggestion that was made, maybe the first suggestion we had, on Monday, the Super Bowl win. They beat the Patriots on Monday night, and they made them white flag it. I mean, they basically gave up midway through the fourth quarter. It was a sound thumping, and I think that was a great victory, a real good feel-good win to beat a dynasty like the Patriots on Monday night and made them white flag it. And number 10 is not a game that I remember seeing, but I can only imagine what it's like. You draft a quarterback and number one pick, and he's from the South, and he went to Ole Miss, and Archie's first game, quarterback sneak in to win the game and beat the Rams. Unless someone convinced me otherwise, I'll put that one at number 10. All right, let's go to the phone lines. Hello.
Hey, Kev. I know it's just a bit off topic, but I just wanted to get your opinion just really, really quick on this with the Saints. I heard a sports writer from New Orleans yesterday, and he was on the afternoon show on y'all's station. And this statement kind of befuddled me. He was saying, they're talking about the Jameis Winston, Taysom Hill battle, and he said, I sure hope it doesn't go back to the days of Aaron Brooks and Jeff Blake. And he said, Benny said, man, that kind of made me throw up in my mouth when I said that. And I was thinking, you know, we've had a lot of bad quarterback play over the years. Aaron Brooks and Jeff Blake probably don't rank up there on my bad list.
Well, no. I mean, I would have no are you kidding me? And people just hate Aaron Brooks, and I understand why. But I would have no problem if the Saints won, what did they win, 10, 11 games and win a playoff game this season. Are you kidding me? In the first year after Drew Brees, I would take 10, 11 wins and a playoff victory.
And I still say if Jeff Blake hadn't got hurt, I think he would have had a good career with the Saints. I really do. But anyway, I just kind of.
Yeah, that's a bad opinion, in my opinion. Yes.
Yeah. Okay, Kev, I appreciate it.
I appreciate it. Thank you. I don't. Look, I can tell you this. And I made the comment earlier this week, we were talking about the Aaron Rodgers situation. To me, again, everybody's different. Everybody views sports and rooting for teams different. And if you listen to me any amount of time, you know I have a lot of different views about how being a fan, and Gerald was laughing about that on Wednesday when we talked to him. But one of the comments that I made earlier this week is I would rather the Saints win with Jameis Winston at quarterback. Because to me, one of the fun things and most satisfying things about being a fan is proving people wrong. When the local and the national opinion is that you're going to lose or this guy's going to fail or this team is washed up and whatever the opinion is or whatever the subject is, and then you win and you prove them wrong. And that, to me, that's what one of the primary things that make a win a feel-good win, a great victory, as I call it. And I would much rather the Saints win with Jameis Winston at quarterback than to win like with Aaron Rodgers. And look, I don't really believe this Aaron Rodgers stuff. I'm just kind of playing along because it was something that some people were talking about because the guy put a post out about it. So, Will I readily admit that they would have a better chance of winning if Aaron Rodgers was the quarterback? Of course they would have a better chance of winning. Of course, it depends when they came in, but I'm not right away, but yeah, obviously Aaron Rodgers is a unique, special, one of the all-time great talents. I mean, I don't argue that as much as I dislike him personally. Or not personally, my idea, I don't know him personally, but my idea of him, he's the most arrogant athlete I've ever seen with my own eyes and ears. But anyway, I would rather win with Jameis. And just because it would prove more people wrong. And the Saints would get the credit for doing it. Not, yeah, the Saints won, but it was, they just, you know, Aaron Rodgers did, you know. I would take it. Don't get me wrong. I would celebrate. I would enjoy the victories. But I wouldn't enjoy it nearly as much if the Saints did it with Jameis Winston and Sean Payton's play calling and offensive system was good enough to correct the issues that Jameis Winston has had in his career, and it produced postseason success and hopefully a Super Bowl. That would be that would not feel nearly as good as having Aaron Rodgers do it. So no, I agree with basically I think what Ralph was saying. If in this first year, I'm sure depending on what happens, if in this first year the Saints win double digit games like they did in the year with Aaron Brooks and Jeff Blake, and they win a playoff game? I mean, I'll take that. I'd rather win the Super Bowl. Don't get me wrong, but you tell me right now, the Saints are going to win double-digit games and going to win a playoff game. I'll sign up for it in the first year in the post-Drew Brees era. Absolutely. Absolutely. Let's go to the phone lines. Hello.
Kevin, you said that he is the most, Rodgers, the most arrogant player you've ever seen, like in modern time or like
in my
30,
life,
40 years?
I mean, he's the most arrogant athlete I've ever seen.
Like Joe Namath, he's worse than Joe Namath and stuff? Like,
oh, yeah, I think so.
What?
I think so. Because
wouldn't you be pissed off if you're Aaron Rodgers, though? Doesn't he have a legit argument that he keeps screwing him every year? I mean, is that like, come on, Kevin. I'd be pissed off and I'd be doing the exact same thing he's doing.
Oh, I'm not. No. I said that long before he held out. I don't. If he wants to hold out, guys hold out all the time. I got no issues with him holding out.
You don't blame him? You don't blame him? They're screwing him.
I don't really blame him for holding out. No, I don't blame him for that. I don't.
How many Super Bowls he can maybe have more than what he, if they put some talent around him and they then draft the quarterback and defensive players every year it happens too. I think it's ridiculous. I think you should screw him big time, man.
All right, Kev. Thank you. Go Tigers.
Thanks. No, I don't look. I don't get the whole, you know me. I'm not for drafting a quarterback. There's no way I'd have done what the Packers did. You know, I'm one of the most anti-draft quarterbacks in the first round guys that there is. So I'm not saying I disagree with him on that subject, but my opinion about his arrogance started way before we even knew who Jordan Love was. I'm not disagreeing with him that much on this situation. I'm just talking about in general. And some of those guys, like, I kind of discount so many of these guys that do things as an act. I don't really count that because I don't think they're really that arrogant. I think it's an act. And they're trying to build a brand. I don't think Aaron Rodgers is trying to build a brand. I think he's really, to his core, that arrogant. Like, why in the world? He really believes, why in the world are you even speaking to me? You are a lower form of human being. That kind of arrogance is what I'm talking about, and I think that's who Aaron Rodgers is. We'll take a commercial break, finish out the show in the week next. 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to Footnotes. Kevin Foot on 103.7 The Game. Want to remind you, starts about 6 o'clock. On Saturday, pregame coverage 5:30, LSU, Tennessee, Knoxville, the Knoxville regional, super regional, I should say, and all the action can be heard right here on 103.7 The Game. Keep in touch because they might play at 11 on Sunday, or they might play at 2, or you know, it's all kind of games. The only thing we know is they're going to start about 6, weather permitting, in Knoxville on Saturday. And you can hear all of the LSU Super Regional action. 103.7 The Game. Should be very interesting to see how that series unfolds. You know, anybody you play in a Super Regional is going to be interesting. But when you play someone from your own conference that you already played and there's a little bit of a history there, that coach's name was one of the first ones that came up. And the coaching search, there's a lot of different layers potentially to this Super Regional between LSU and Tennessee, and you know, so we'll look forward to seeing how that. And if you're out and about and you want to keep up, certainly we encourage you to listen to the game, 103.7 The Game, or just watch it on TV and listen. And even better. But we'll be following. I'm sure there'll be plenty of college baseball Super Regional action. Watched over the weekend by our listeners and people in our area, I was really hoping that Florida State on the softball side would beat Oklahoma so we wouldn't have a Gestapo victory. I consider Oklahoma one of them Gestapo universities, and pretty much, you know, hardly ever pull for them in anything. And so it's, you know, it wasn't a chalk road. You know, they did get beat. And they did have to fight, scratch, and claw their way to get to that championship round. And it wasn't against UCLA or Alabama. And so, you know, I couldn't say that the Women's College World Series was chalk like I feared that it might be. But the number one seed overall ended up winning it. So I guess you could argue it had some chalkness to it. But they had to fight, scratch, and claw to do it. And they did win. and I was kind of hoping Florida State would win, but oh well, that's the way it goes sometimes. So again, it's high school football next week. So if you're a high school football fan, if as a fan or a player, or you remember, certainly feel free and encourage you to call next week and to help us out and get kind of relive some of those memories. Also, want to wish my wife Michelle a happy anniversary on Sunday. It'll be 29 years of marriage. So some people didn't think we'd make it this far. And we have, so thank the Lord for that. Y'all have a nice weekend.